The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Command Zone. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And it's time for
Dragon Week!
Yeah, bro!
I feel like we should be drinking like Bud Lights. It's like cheersing them.
You know what's awesome? We did not practice that.
We didn't actually. And it was right on it. I should have rolled with you. Rawr!
There's something within each person that just dragons just get you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Dragon Week is here. Maybe it's a yearly occurring thing. Maybe it's a daily thing. Who knows?
Daily. Well, but it is Dragon Week here on the Command Zone.
That's
We're inspired by, of course, Dragons of Tarkir.
And Shark Week.
And Shark Week. Yeah, that's actually a really good point.
So we're dedicating a whole week of our podcast to dragons, which means actually we're just doing two shows this week instead of one.
Yeah, you guys are going to get two shows.
Yeah.
What's happened is that Jimmy and I have each built a dragon deck,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to talk about one on today's show and one on this Thursday's show. So we're going to have a Thursday show.
And it's the first time we've ever released two shows in a row like this, where we're sort of splitting it into two. Let us know if you guys like this format. So the shows themselves are going to be slightly
short.
Shorter.
Not long.
I was trying to say less. I was going to say less longer, but that's the worst English I've ever had. Each of the episodes will be slightly shorter. Let us know if you guys think, if you like the format, / if you just love Dragon Week, roar.
Well, no, you don't even have to let us know that. We already know.
We
you
already
love
know.
It.
That's right.
Jimmy, can I ask you a question?
Oh, yes.
What is your favorite thing about dragons?
I've been preparing this answer ever since I saw you in the outline, and the answer is everything.
Everything.
I like dragons. My favorite thing about dragons is I think it's one of the most overly like done sort of clan, if that makes sense.
Tribe.
And there are dragons of every kind. And I think that's my favorite part, is that you can pretty much, like, usually if you're like, oh, I need the flicker effect, you have to go here for this color for that. But for dragons, you can be like, oh, there's a dragon for that.
It's like there's an app for that.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a dragon for that.
There's a dragon for that.
Hey, that actually is going to have a lot to do with my deck.
Yeah, I'm excited. Josh, can I ask you something?
Yes.
What is your favorite thing about dragons?
Oh, I like that they burninate everything. It's like Trogdor.
It is like Trogdor.
Burninating the countryside. Burninating the peasants.
Someone please make a Trogdor fake card, and it will be Josh's new commander.
But there were still dragons! Yes!
That is hilarious. I agree there. And I guess my other favorite thing is that so many dragons are my favorite color, red.
That's true. I've put more red in this deck than maybe any other deck I own.
Yeah, if you looked at all our tapped out decks, there's almost no red represented.
There's a little, but it's like splash of this, splash of that, Chaos Warp Fork, Wheel of Fortune. Okay, that's enough. You know, not this one. This one's got a lot of red.
Yeah, exactly. It's a pretty nice split down the middle for your deck here.
Before we get into that, though, I want to talk about the Dragons of Tarkir pre-release and release events that we just got done having.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy.
Woohoo!
Jimmy 4-0'd his last pre-release event. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, it was really cool. So I had played, fortunately at the time, my girlfriend's best friend was also in town, so it was like free weekends. I get to play in a few pre-release events.
You played in like four?
I played in three.
Okay.
I think four might be a little excessive.
Oh yeah, no, I would never do four, only three.
Only three. I only got to play three of the clans, and actually only played two of the clans. The first time I played Kolaghan, she who shall not be named, sorry, Josh,
Kamal.
Mm-hmm. And I had a blast because I had this deck with these Ambuscade Shamans, which give a creature +2/+2 when they enter the battlefield, which is totally an EDH card too, which is awesome.
Uh-huh.
And I was dashing out these 2/2 imps, and they're swinging for four, and I went 2-1 that night, and I really liked it. The next night, I went Silumgar, didn't have as much of a positive experience, and the third and final pre-release, on Sunday morning, I went Kolaghan all over again, and I foiled the whole thing, which was great.
Nice. And, you know, Kamal is your spirit color.
Yeah, black-red.
As much as I dislike her. But I like her in Limited.
Yes.
So don't get me wrong.
K-Mole like Unlimited is a house. Every single time it landed, if it wasn't destroyed within that turn, it won me the game.
We should say that one of the pre-release events we went to, we also went with the Space Janitors guys from episode 34.
And listener
Andy
Vincent.
Andy Hull went 4-0.
Oh, yeah, that's right. With
Andy
Cylindar.
Hullbone on Twitter. And yeah, one of our listeners, Vincent Trong, was there, and Brendan was there, and everybody had a really good time. Yeah. It was Andy and Brendan's first pre-release, too.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
4-0, your first pre-release.
Pretty great.
He's addicted for life.
He's a big limited resources listener. So, Marshall, you can take credit for all of that.
Yeah, and mine too, Marshall, even though I only listened to half the review because I couldn't
make it
through.
You can take credit for half of Jimmy's.
You get two of my
You
victories.
Get 1.5 4-0s.
Oh, yes. Good. That is actually pretty darn good. That's value right there.
So, really quickly, what have you learned about the limited format for Dragons of Tarkir? I know we're a Commander podcast. Don't worry, we're going to get to that, but, you know, some people are interested.
It was really interesting. I think red and black are incredibly strong because they have all of the best removal.
There's tons of removal.
Not to mention, they still have one Fate Reforge pack when you end up drafting this, so that means you can still get your Pyrotechnics and Reach of Shadows. Yeah. So you have access to pretty much the best removal in the entire format, and there's a lot of flying and a lot of Megamorphs, and you want to get rid of stuff because...
How did you find the format as a whole, though?
I thought it was really fun.
Yeah.
It was way more fun than Khan's Fate. Because,
yes, I totally agree.
Yeah, so I had a blast every single time I got to play, just because all the cards with the rebound going on, and it felt like Prowess, what's not called Prowess anymore, but the idea of Prowess was a lot more fun when you got to cast a rebounded card and you know.
I felt like there was just so much to do. I played only one event and I did go Silumgar. But man, I just felt like I'm going to play this card, I'm going to sack another card, I'm going to draw cards, and then I'm going to do this thing, I'm going to flip it up, I'm going to destroy an artifact, and then I'm going to do this other thing, and I'm going to flip that up, and I'm going to get something out of my graveyard. Like, I was just always doing cool stuff.
Yeah.
It wasn't just like a lot of formats where you're like, I play my creature, go. It was like, man, I got all these choices to make.
X-Blood, I think, it just felt like EDH a lot of times. Like, you were playing these cards with this Deathfin Raptor, and it was coming back because you were re-manifesting stuff, and re-morphing stuff. It was gross. You were drawing so much. We played a couple of games, and I lost 2-0 to Josh because we were pairing in the second round. I was like, let's play one more. Like, my deck can do this. It did not get there.
My deck had so much card draw. There was one game where...
It was awesome.
It was one game where I had... I lost this game, but I had 7 cards left in my library. I had all 17 lands out on the table. And the other
really?
And the other guy had 18 cards left in his library. That's how many more cards I had drawn than him. Problem was... He had 8 lands out, so 9 of the cards I drew over him were lands.
Oh, well, that'll
but still,
happen.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah, you could literally cast 2 Ugins, though, if you wanted to, right?
Yeah, and if I had 2 Ugins in my pool, I'd be cheating.
That's true. Then you get a foil one and a regular one, right?
Oh, yeah, true. Good point. Yeah. My bad.
So, talking about theoretical things, let's talk about the decks that we're going to discuss on Dragon Week.
Dragon Week!
Roar! We are all Sarkon today.
I'm channeling my inner Timmy. I'm so excited. I don't get to do that very often.
I do it every day. Okay, you have a lot to learn, young one.
You're going to have to be guiding me through this because I'm sort of new to the Timmy world, but it is fun.
Is it big? It's awesome.
Okay, so let's talk about how we built these. I think the only stipulation that we gave each other was it had to be dragon-focused.
Yeah.
Dragon-centric.
I think dragon as a commander is pretty reasonable as well.
We both picked dragon commanders. Now, these decks aren't real. We haven't built them physically yet. We've just gone through the process of building the entire deck online, so you'll have availability to that deck list. But, you know, they're going to need tuning.
Definitely.
You never build a deck, and you look at the deck list, and then you play it, and it works out how you want it to.
Yeah. You would be... Well, you'd be in a different level if you did that.
What you usually do is you play it, and you find out if the central idea of the deck is viable. And then you start making tweaks, and... You know, around that, just being like, is this going to work? Like, can it work? Does it work?
Hey everyone, before we get into the deck tech, there's actually one small interaction that we missed when we recorded this originally, and we misread the text of Scion of Ur-Dragon. You can actually only use his ability once per turn, because once Scion turns into a new dragon, it loses the original ability to pay 2 and copy another dragon. So anytime we mention changing it twice in a turn, just ignore that. That's actually against the rules. Very sorry about the confusion. This is a good example of what happens when you build version 1 of a deck and haven't gotten to test it yet. All right, on to the deck tech.
All right, you want to just dive in?
Yeah. So who did you build your deck around, Josh?
Well, you know, I mean, there was only one I could go with. Can you guess who it is?
Does it have three colors in it?
No.
Well, technically, yes.
That's a good point. It does have three colors.
Does it have four colors in it?
Yes.
Does it have five?
Yes, it does.
Bing! We found Josh's...
Big surprising no one, I went with a Wooburg dragon commander named Scion of the Ur-Dragon.
Yeah, very nice. He's not blue-red because he has Ur in his name. He's actually all five colors.
Yes. Let me read him really quick. He costs Wooburg.
Nice.
He's a 4/4 flyer, legendary creature, dragon avatar. His ability is you pay two, search your library for a dragon permanent card, and put it into your graveyard. If you do, Scion of the Ur-Dragon becomes a copy of that card until end of turn. Then shuffle your library.
Hey.
So this is...
That's pretty sweet.
He basically is Entomb,
mm-hmm.
only for a dragon card. It's not exactly Entomb because it right. can get it's a dragon permanent, but it's basically Entomb on a stick.
Yeah, for two mana.
For two mana. Repeatable. And you do not have to tap him, notably, when you pay the two mana. So mm-hmm. you can do it and then do it again. So it's sort of a conditional tutor almost.
Because yeah.
you're finding a specific card and putting it in your graveyard. So it's tutoring, but it's only going to graveyard. But Entomb is a very powerful card.
Yeah, and the idea that you can also do this at instant speed if someone's trying to kill your yes. guy, being like, oh, that did so much damage, let me find the guy that will survive that attack.
Yes, it's very, very powerful. It's very hard to go after him when you've got two open mana because they don't mm-hmm. know what cards you've got in your deck. And if they don't, you know, they don't know every dragon that's ever existed, and you can turn them into literally anything. They
Unless
don't
they're
know.
The Ultra Timmy, they do not know yeah. every dragon that's ever existed, yeah.
So it makes me want to build this deck that's got lots of dragons, because it's Dragon Week.
Mm-hmm.
Roar!
Roar! Roar! Fire, fire breathing. Fire. I'm burning the mic up. Spitting hot rhymes.
Man, we're good at sound effects. So it wants me to put lots of dragons in the graveyard, and then bring all of them out and set and burninate some fools.
Yeah, burninate.
I want to burninate in the countryside. Burninate all the other players.
You want to watch the table burn, and you're at the Dragon Roost laughing maniacally as it happens.
Yes, like Sarkin when he was crazy, not Sarkin now that he's sane.
Right.
Yeah, because he was more like
was
the
Joker.
Was
he ever fully sane? I mean, he like now he's traipsed through time, and now he has blue in his hair.
You know, we can ask this first dragon that I have in my deck if he was ever fully sane.
Good call. Nicol Bolas, what do you have to say about that?
So the original Nicol Bolas.
Yeah.
The elder dragon.
The elderest.
Nicol Bolas, who
I've always wanted to put this guy in a deck, and I yeah. never found a place for him.
I mean, he's the original gangsta.
Yeah.
Like, this guy is, like, the OG. He's for real.
Yeah.
He's legit. I'll read him really quick. It's going to sound a little bit insane, because this is how they used to make Elder Dragons. He's two blue, two black, and two red, so that's eight total. He's a 7/7 legendary creature Elder Dragon. He's got flying. It says, at the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice Nicol Bolas unless you pay blue, black, and red. So you have to pay that every upkeep just to keep him on the board. But he says, whenever Nicol Bolas deals damage to an opponent, that player discards his or her hand.
Oof.
So if it ever hits you, your whole hand's gone. Now, how does this work with Scion of the Ur-Dragon? Oh, I don't know. You attack. They don't block. You go, okay, I pay two. I put Nicol Bolas into my graveyard, and now my Scion of the Ur-Dragon is a Nicol Bolas until I'm turned. Discard your hand, dude.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah.
And you get around the 8 mana casting costs of Nicol Bolas.
And
plus
the upkeep.
And the upkeep, and he doesn't... Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's brutal.
That is brutal.
The first time you do that, then every other time after that, you go attack with my Scion of the Ur-Dragon. They're going to go, block! Block!
Yeah, block, block. I don't know. I don't want to know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to know what is coming at me. And that's awesome because... Nicol Bolas, A, he is the original gangster, and B, the fact that you can cheat him out like this, and this is something we're going to see recur through the rest of the deck, is pretty awesome.
So now remember, we have Nicol Bolas in our graveyard, and mm-hmm. then maybe we get this next guy. What's the next one?
Draco.
Draco. Malfoy?
Draco Malfoy. He's a colorless 16 drop. That's right. You heard it right. He is 16 mana to cast. He's an artifact creature dragon that's a 9/9. However, he costs two less to play for each basic land type among lands you control.
So you're usually going to get at least 5 discount.
Right. And at best, you're going to get 10, so he costs 6. Yeah. Otherwise, he's 11 for a 9/9, which is also acceptable. But again, we don't even care about that because of our general. And he has another Nicol Bolas type effect. At the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice Draco unless you pay 10, and that cost is reduced by 2 for each basic land type among lands you control.
So there's no upkeep if you have all 5 basic land types in play. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you need a forest, a mountain, a swamp. A Badlands will count as a...
As both.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
so,
swamp and mountain.
Yeah, you just need every land type represented. Mm-hmm. Anyway, again, you're not going to cast him very often.
Yeah, I would be very surprised if you actually cast this guy.
Right.
I like Draco. That's another nice little addition here.
That's just a, hey, oh, you didn't block? Just take 9. Commander damage.
Yeah.
I'll just turn my guy into...
Right, because Scion still counts as your commander, even though you're shape-shifting him
over here.
He's
just cloned into a Draco for that turn, but he's still your commander.
Very nice.
The next guy I like is Karthus, Tyrant of Jund. This could be a whole deck, but...
Yeah, he is a lot of people's decks, yeah.
Yeah, he's 4, a black, a red, and a green. He's a legendary creature, dragon. He's got flying and haste. When Karthus, Tyrant of Jund, enters the battlefield, gain control of all dragons, then untap all dragons, and then other dragon creatures you control have haste. So if you copy him with Scion, you won't get the enter the battlefield effect.
Right.
Which is fine, because you might just need the haste.
Yeah, and other dragons having haste.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
But also sometimes you're going to have this dragon in your hand, mm-hmm. or you're going to reanimate him from the battlefield, and then you are going to get the untap all dragons and gain control of all dragons thing, and then they'll all have haste.
Yeah.
And that's a super powerful effect if anybody else has a dragon or two, or even if you just have a few of your own that you want to give haste to.
Yeah, definitely.
And haste, it's just what you want in this deck is you want a bunch of dragons that have specific abilities, and it's sort of toolboxy because you go, oh, I want my commander to have haste this turn. I go get this guy. Oh, I want my commander to hit for a whole ton of damage this turn. I go get this guy. Oh, I want my commander to have hexproof. I go get this guy. So it's just, you have a lot of responses. It's very toolboxy. But ultimately, you are still bashing them directly in the face a lot of the time. In fact, this next guy...
That's one of your win conditions, correct? Is just to kill them through damage alone?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, the next guy is... You want to read him?
Oh, yeah. It's Atarka, World Renderer. So
this
the
original Atarka.
Yeah,
the
Fate Reforged, not the...
He's the younger dragon.
Yeah, he's not the Elder Dragon.
Yeah.
He's a 5, a red and green for a 6/4 flying trample. However, the most important text by far is whenever a dragon you control attacks, it gains double strike until end of turn. Any dragons that are attacking under your control gains double strike.
So if you manage to get Scion and a couple dragons out, or even just Scion and one other dragon, or even just Scion.
Yeah.
Because you just can go and use his ability, put Atarka in the bin, and then he becomes a target for that turn and attacks for 12 commander damage.
Yeah, that's pretty intense. Not to mention, if you do have other guys out, they are all crashing in for a ton of damage.
Yeah.
I feel like this is one of those guys that you pull out when you want to just win the game in one turn.
Yeah, you're just like, oh, I got to kill that guy. Okay. Atarka. My guy's Atarka. What are you going to do about it? Oh, yeah. You take 12, you're dead.
Yeah. You take all this damage. Yeah. And that card is just awesome. The deck that I build is kind of similar, but it's got one more color. But Atarka would be another great build around me, general, for if you guys are trying to go the sort of the Xenagos route.
Yeah, just bash people really hard.
Oh my gosh. Xenagos and Atarka would be way too much damage.
It's what I like about this deck is you can sort of pivot and go into like super like, oh, I'm just going to do as much damage to you as possible. But you can also go into like, oh, I got a toolbox, and I'm going to find some guys that have some utility.
Yeah, definitely.
Like the next guy is Steel Hellkite.
Yeah, this has got to be one of the best dragons I think ever printed for EDH.
I totally agree. He's a colorless artifact creature dragon, 6 colorless mana for a 5/5 flyer. He has 2 abilities. One is pay 2, and Steel Hellkite gets +1/+0. So he's got 2 colorless for fire breathing. And then also you can pay X and destroy each non-land permanent with converted mana cost X whose controller was dealt combat damage by Steel Hellkite this turn. Activate this ability only once each turn. So you can just look at them and they go, oh, you've got 3 things that cost 3 mana. I'm going to pay 3 mana.
Yeah.
And if Steel Hellkite hits them, you kill everything. You destroy everything that costs 3 mana.
If they have 1,000 tokens, you can actually pay 0 and destroy every single one of those tokens. Yeah. And all you have to do is deal combat damage. And like we said, it's really easy to get in with Scion because if they don't block, there's your free Steel Hellkite right there.
And Scion has to be one of the scariest things to block.
Yeah,
because
absolutely.
Don't know what we're going to turn it into.
Yeah.
So very often they're going to be like, okay, take it. And then you're going to be like, oh, I'll turn it into Steel Hellkite and kill all your stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, or I'm going to hit you for a billion damage with Atarka.
And I've played Steel Hellkite quite a bit in a few of my decks, and the thing I found that's the most important is that you only need Steel Hellkite to hit them once to essentially set them... To destroy them, yeah, to set them back for pretty much the remainder of the game, because... If you know, like, for instance, I remember someone had swords out. He also had Lightning Greaves and some other things. And with one Steel Hellkite swing, it was all eradicated from the board. And that person was out of the game from that point.
I mean, it's really hard to come back from like five of your permanents die and nobody else's stuff goes away.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you're just so far behind.
Yeah, totally.
You want to read the next guy?
Yeah, this is actually our first Elder Dragon. I'm going to put it in quotes because they're not
Nicol Bolas was our first Elder Dragon.
Yeah, it's true. This is for the first Elder Dragon from Dragons of Tarkir. It's Dragon Lord Ojutai. 3 white and a blue for a 5/4 with flying. Dragon Lord Ojutai has hexproof as long as it's untapped. And whenever he deals, whenever she deals combat damage to a player, look at the top three cards of your library. Put one of them into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. So that's like anticipate kind of on
yeah,
the stick.
Yeah, it's very toolboxy. So there's a couple things you can do. Obviously, you're there. They go to kill your guy and you go, oh, I'll turn it into Ojutai and give it hexproof.
Yeah.
So their spot removal just fizzles.
Oh, that's right. Actually, at any point, you could just pull out Ojutai and it's an automatic.
It would have to be untapped.
Right, right.
Because she's only hexproof when she's untapped.
Right.
But then also you can be like, well, I'm in a tough spot and I need to draw some cards, so I'll turn her into Ojutai, hit them, mm-hmm. and draw a card and get a little selection there. So, yeah, it's a pretty good toolboxy thing to do is have Ojutai.
I like that a lot.
The next guy is a house. It's Scourge of the Throne.
Oh, gosh.
It's 4 and 2 red for a creature dragon. It's a 5/5 flying. It has Dethrone, which is a conspiracy mechanic. If we'll recall, if you attack the player with the most life or tied for the most life, you put a 1/1 counter on it. And then it also has additional text. Whenever Scourge of the Throne attacks for the first time each turn, if it's attacking the player with the most life or tied for the most life, untap all attacking creatures. After this phase, there's an additional combat phase.
Nice.
So being able to turn Scion into Scourge of the Throne at will mm-hmm. allows you to only use it if there's a point where somebody's got the most life and you can get the most out of two attacks.
Yeah.
And then the awesome thing about Scion is you turn Scion into Scourge. You attack with everything.
Mm-hmm.
You untap it all. Then you go to your second attack and you turn the Scion into something else. So that the Scourge, you know, Scourge isn't as good the second attack, but a Tark is still great. He gives all your stuff double strike. And so then you turn it into something else on the second attack. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Scourge is really a house because the fact that you get to choose is really what's so important here. And you get to
change it in between both combats to something else
uh-huh.
so that you get to get more effect on the second attack than you do on the first. I think very often if this deck sticks two dragons and Scion, uh-huh. Scourge is like go and kill somebody or maybe even win because you might be able to just kill somebody with one attack and kill the other guy with the second attack.
Mm-hmm.
So very cool card. There's a whole bunch of more dragons. We're not going to talk about all of them. This next section, I call it, I'm bringing sexy back.
Yeah.
Because you're putting all these dragons into your graveyard.
Your graveyard, yeah.
Yeah, because you're turning the Scion into them for one turn, but then it's like they're sitting in the graveyard. You might as well use them.
Yeah. And the reanimate effects are actually, I run a bunch of them in my Kalia deck because I find that dragons are often a choice of targeted removal just because they are quite often very powerful.
And very scary.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And also, reanimate effects are generally cheap.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a way to get a creature that would cost 6, 7, 8 mana onto the battlefield for 1, 2, 3 mana.
Right, and that's the power of Entomb, is that it's often much easier to get something on the battlefield from your graveyard than to draw it and cast it.
Right.
And you can do it much more quickly. For instance, Reanimate is the first one on the board, and it's just a very simple 1 black for a sorcery. Put target creature card from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control, and you lose life equal to its converted mana cost.
Yep. So
for 1 mana, you can sorcery speed put anything onto the battlefield.
Right.
That's pretty good.
And also, if you're going to Scourge of the Throne, you might not want to be the most life total. So it's another mm-hmm. way to sort of lower your life total to maybe like Scourge of the Throne them.
Yeah. I mean, love that reanimate for that, actually. Playing with Scourge life totals.
The second one is Loyal Retainers. It's 2 and a white for a human advisor, a 1/1. It says sacrifice Loyal Retainers, return target legendary creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. Activate this ability only during your turn before attackers are declared. So we'll notice that a lot of the dragons are elder dragons. They're legendary creatures. They're Karthus.
Mm-hmm.
There's a few other legendary creatures we'll talk about in a minute. Scion itself, not that you'll ever put it in the graveyard, but if you did, you could get it out. And also, the problem with decks like these, dragon decks, decks that have big creatures, is you end up not really casting stuff on turns 2, 3, and 4,
mm-hmm.
you know, except for mana ramp or something.
So you want to have a couple of options.
Yeah, this gives you something to do on turn 3 that's actually setting you up for something awesome on turn 6. Because you figure you play Scion on turn 5. On turn 6, you activate it, put something in the bin, and then use Loyal Retainers to cheat it out for free.
And if you have a haste enabler, they could potentially attack that turn,
Let's say the thing was Karthus.
Yeah.
So then, boom. Although you'd have to change the sign into something else before you did it. Otherwise, you have two Karthuses. Listen, it'll still work, though. You just have to do whatever. You guys can figure it out.
What I like, too, is you can actually enter combat and then sack the loyal retainer, so you don't need to be in your first main phase to do it. It's only before you declare attackers. So you can be in the quote-unquote combat phase before you turn people sideways, and then someone can come back. Because sometimes, usually, entering combat, someone will be like, all right, I tap him down.
Right.
And you'll be like, great, I'm going to use loyal retainers to bring back Nicol Bolas. Have fun with that, buddy.
You have no hand now.
Yeah.
I hope you like it. You want to read the next one?
Yeah, Yor Tiller Nephilim. Now, when I first saw this on the list, I was like, what is Josh talking about? What is this card? And then I read it, and I was like, this is very nice. It's got a very strange casting cost. It could potentially be, like, a sign of four-color commanders to come,
Are playgroups where they allow this and a few others to be played as four-color commanders.
Oh, interesting.
They're not technically legendary creatures, though, right. So it's not a part of the official rules.
So he's red, white, blue, and black for a 2/2 creature Nephilim. Whenever this creature attacks, return target creature card from your graveyard to play, tapped and attacking. Very nice. And the funny thing is you can only play this in the five-color deck right now under current commander rules.
Yeah, you
rules.
Could never play it in anything that was three-color, obviously. Yeah.
And it's especially nice in an aggro deck like this because you want to be tapped and attacking. If you're not doing that, then something's not going as the right way, right? It's not as you have planned.
This is a deck that definitely attacks. And also, just cheating stuff out into play is like crazy powerful.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, because you're going to be getting some huge dragon, and you get to choose what that dragon is, because when you're about to attack, you just sign of the Ur-Dragon to whatever you want that dragon to be, and then you grab it. So it's not like you're getting something random. You're getting exactly what you want at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that card is super powerful. The last one in the bringing sexy back category is Cedrus the Traitor King.
Another definitely fun build around me commander.
Yeah, this can be a whole deck. This is a great thing about playing five color is you can play all these legendary creatures that would otherwise be commanders.
Right.
So Cedrus is 3 blue, black, and red for a legendary creature zombie warrior. He's a 5/5. He just says each creature card in your graveyard has Unearth for 2 and a black. So Unearth means for 2 and a black, you can return a card to play. The creature gains haste, and you remove it from the game at the end of turn if it would leave play. Unearth only as a sorcery.
Right. So you can essentially active treason the guy out of your library, kind of, and then or out of your graveyard, and then at the end of the turn it gets it goes bye-bye.
Yeah. So, well, it gets exiled.
Exiled, yeah.
So it's active treasoning, but at the end of turn it gets exiled no matter what. So, mm-hmm. But you don't care to use them twice. You're just cheating out a dragon that costs 6 or 7 mana mm-hmm. for only 3 mana, and it's got haste.
And you've already used it once, technically, if you're attacking
to turn
with
your scion into it. And a lot of times you can be like, oh, before on the end step before your turn, I'm going to dump 3 dragons into my graveyard, and now I'm going to unearth all 3 of them and attack you with Scion and
oh,
those
wow,
guys.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Yeah, so it can be just one of those moments where like, oh, I just killed somebody, or I just, mm-hmm. or maybe 2 people. So it's very powerful. People shy away from these type of effects because they're like, well, then he gets exiled. But it's like, how many times do you have to hit them with the dragon before you win the game?
Yeah, and it's also like, there have been so many times where I wish I got 2 uses out of a card, and the fact that I can, it makes me super giddy.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, Cedrus is a nice addition here.
The next category, I'm just going to call win condition.
Yep.
So what I found is a group of cards that basically all have the similar effect, and I think they're close to they'll win you the game most of the time you cast them.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's all based around Living End, Living Death, All Hallows Eve.
Mm-hmm.
They're all basically the same card, and they all basically say, they have different conditions for how they work, but they all basically say, take the creatures in play, put them in the graveyard. Take the creatures that were in the graveyard, put them in play.
Yeah, and this goes for every player, usually.
Yes, usually.
But in a deck like this, I something tells me that your graveyard's much better stacked than someone else's.
Again, the turn before you're going to cast this, you can just dump a ton of, for 2 mana each, you can put as many dragons as you want in there.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just make sure your graveyard is stacked. It's one of the few decks I'd say like on turn 6 or 7, you could legitimately play, you know, Living End and have so much power in there that you can just destroy people.
Yeah. I play Living End in my Anafenta deck as well because
everybody
I'm
else's
actively
creatures get...
stopping them from getting creatures in the graveyard anyway. So
you're going to pull out all your guys and they're going to get nothing.
Yeah.
And that's often going to happen if you do this early enough.
Mm-hmm.
And you can because Scion's allowing you to put things in there.
Yeah. They might get a couple of other things back in there. But again, like your dragons are way better than most creatures in general.
And the thing that puts this over the top is actually a new Elder Dragon. It's Dromoka, Dragon Lord Dromoka from the new set.
Mm-hmm.
Dragon Lord Dromoka reads four, a green and a white. It's a 5/7 flying lifelinker. It says Dragon Lord Dromoka cannot be countered, but it's the next part. Your opponent can't cast spells during your turn. So here's how this works. I dump as many dragons into my bin as I can. During my upkeep, I activate Scion, put Dromoka in my bin, and turn Scion into Dromoka.
For the remainder of the turn.
If that resolves, now I'm clear to play Living End, and nobody can do anything about it.
Mm-hmm. No one can even counter, no one can spot removal, anything.
Nope, or sorry, Living Death. Living End takes a few turns. Yeah, and so that just, you know you're in the clear. So mm-hmm. you can absolutely cast it, absolutely pull it off. And you just, right then, it's easy to make the calculation of
jeez. Of so for you two mana, you get like the safety belt that's like, hey, have fun.
Yep. Safety belt of like, whatever I want to do this turn, no one can stop me.
Right.
It's not quite true. If they have onboard effects, abilities, mm-hmm. abilities still work. But, you know, you can see those. So you can look around and be like, there's none of those. I'll do it.
Yeah, definitely.
So super powerful. Dromoka is a really incredible card in this deck because you can do that for a number of things and just guarantee that your turn is going to go how you want it.
Giving yourself that one free turn is super useful. I can definitely see that being very relevant in a lot of games.
And then we'll move to the cards you may not think of section.
Actually, there's one from your list that I wanted to bring up, and that'd be Varash the Hunter.
Oh, yeah.
He's 3 and green, Sultai, green, blue, black. He's a 6/6, and whenever he deals combat damage to a player, you may pay 2 in green, and if you do, put 6 +1/+1 counters on Varash, which means they stay on Scion,
yes.
and Varash just hits the bin, which when I first saw Varash, I was like, he's all right, and then I read Scion again, and I was like, oh, this synergy is very real.
Yeah, the counters will stay.
Yeah.
So now the next turn, you turn him into a Tarka, and a Tarka is now a 12/10 double strike trampler.
Yeah.
So that's... you know, that's gonna kill somebody because
if it hits him, exactly. It's commander damage.
Yeah, so they're just the six 1/1 counters are worth a lot.
Yeah,
that's and remember, you're gonna be solid. You're gonna have a lot of ways to play cards out of your graveyard. This mm-hmm. is that type of deck. So just putting them in the graveyards, they're not gone. Mm-hmm. It's actually making it easier for you to get them into play.
Yeah.
Okay, cards you might not think of. The first one is Conspiracy.
Oh. I wonder if the original expansion of Conspiracy was named after this card or...
It wasn't very tribe-related. This is a very tribal card. It's 3/2 red for an enchantment. It says, as Conspiracy comes into play, choose a creature type. Creature cards you own that aren't in play, creature spells you control, and creatures you control are the chosen type.
So essentially it turns any deck into a tribal one by saying, they're all goblins now, they're all dragons, they're all
so
this.
So everything's a dragon.
Mm-hmm.
So now you can turn Scion of the Ur-Dragon into Cedrus.
Oh, you can turn, look at that. He can become the Oracle of Moldiah.
Yeah, you can turn him into whatever creature card you've got because it turns all the cards in your library into dragon cards. So
tricky,
any permanent...
Tricky,
yeah.
I really like that.
So then he's like... this is maybe the most powerful card in the deck because mm-hmm. your toolbox just grows by leaps and bounds as soon as you get Conspiracy out on the table.
Right. So he can become literally anything in any of the creatures in your deck. And there are lots of good creatures for him to become.
I mean, we're going to go through, still in cards you may not think of. You want to read the next one?
Oh, yes. Carador, Ghost Chieftain. Again, another commander.
Very powerful deck.
And obviously a great fit here. So he's 5 and Abzan, which is black, green, white for a 3/4 legendary creature. But he costs 1 less to cast for each creature card in your graveyard.
What are we doing? We're just putting creature cards in our graveyard the whole game.
Yeah, and during each of your turns, what else do we want to do? Reanimate them. Yep. You can cast one creature card from your graveyard. So Carador allows you to make him cheap to get out and also will recur one of your creatures each turn if you have the mana for it.
He's extremely strong in this deck.
Yeah.
Because now you're just pure tutor.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes he'll just be dropped out for 3 mana total.
I would say very often because mm-hmm. you're literally just putting dragons into your graveyard all the time, turning Scion into them.
Yeah, yeah. So very strong card. And I'm a big fan of that because you rarely see him outside of his regular sort of build around me commander status. So it's kind of cool to see him inside this shell.
It's something I tried to do in the deck. I was like, oh man, I'm going to put all these awesome commanders mm-hmm. that work with this strategy in here because it allows you to sort of, you're playing half a Carador deck and half of a... This next one, Kalia deck.
That's right.
So Kalia of the Vast is 1 white, black, red. She's a legendary creature, human cleric. She's a 2/2 flyer. But it says, whenever Kalia of the Vast attacks an opponent, you may put an angel, demon, or dragon card from your hand onto the battlefield, tapped and attacking that opponent.
Pretty nice.
So she cheats. What are we always saying? Cheating mana cost is good.
Mm-hmm.
So she just cheats a dragon directly from your hand into play. and it's attacking already.
Yeah.
And so, she's not your main thing. You know, in a Kalia deck, you're like, oh, crap, kill Kalia as soon as possible. In this deck, okay, fine. That just leaves my Scion just sitting there.
Yeah, I'll reanimate her later. I'll get her back with Caradore. I don't care. That's fine if you got rid of her for
she's
one turn.
She's not my
sure.
main plan.
Yeah, I've got plenty of other backup plans here. Yeah. And that's usually the weakness of Kalia decks is once Kalia is gone, they're just stuck with a grip full of like 9 mana, 10 yep. mana creatures.
Well, and think of this. If you have Conspiracy out, you mm-hmm. turn your Scion into Kalia, attack, drop a huge thing.
Yeah.
Then you turn your Scion back into something that hits for more than two.
Yeah, that's pretty... That's a fantastic, fantastic...
Yeah, because...
Actually, you could turn the Scion into Kalia, attack, and then when they block Kalia, because they're like, ha, she's a 2-2, you could turn them into another creature.
Turn them into a Tarka and yeah. kill the thing and still... You know, trample over for another 10 damage.
Oh man, this is getting me excited to play this
right?
deck.
Right?
You better build it, Josh.
It's going to cost me a lot of money.
I know, you've got some of the most famous dragons in the land sort of playing around here. And another creature that is very good for
as a commander.
As a commander, yeah, and also for grabbing stuff out of your graveyard or using stuff in graveyards is the Mimeoplasm. And, Phil from the Five Commanders has a Mimeoplasm deck, right?
Yeah, it's very strong. He's beat us. He's beat me in the head with it a couple times.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll read it. Mimeoplasm is 2, a green, a blue, and a black for a legendary creature. Ooze, it's a 0/0, but as the Mimeoplasm enters the battlefield, you may exile 2 creature cards from graveyards. If you do, it enters the battlefield as a copy of one of those cards with a number of additional 1/1 counters on it equal to the power of the other card. So Ooh. This doesn't even have to be your graveyard, but it usually will be.
Mm-hmm.
You pick a big creature, and it gets that many counters, and you pick a utility creature, and it gets those abilities.
Yeah.
It basically becomes, like, let's say Kalia, but the size of a Tarka.
Yeah, so it mixes and matches two yeah. creatures together to create this weird ooze...
Awesome.
Awesome thing that is all of a sudden flying.
It creates a Trogdor, basically.
Yeah, it really Burn does. Burn a day in the countryside. It's got giant buff arms and it's breathing fire. Yeah, it does create Trogdor.
But that, it's still a dragon!
It is still a dragon, and it will barely get off the ground because that ooze is quite heavy, but it does make it. It does make it over. Yeah, Mimeoplasm is a great include in this deck. I'm a big fan of that in here as well, just because it's another way to recur your creatures without actually
getting them
physically out of the graveyard. Yeah, and the fact that it says any graveyards means that sometimes you're just going to get an Oracle Maldaia that is also like a 10-10.
Yep, exactly, because you're just randomly going to get somebody's awesome thing.
Yeah, pretty much. Speaking of which, is the Oracle Maldaia in this deck, Josh?
Yes.
Okay, good. Just checking.
Maldaia is one of the best mana ramp cards in history, and it doesn't ask that much of you.
Yeah, it really doesn't, especially because it's just two colors.
Yeah.
Another card that you may not think of is a new enchantment from Fate Reforged. It is Frontier Siege, 3 and a green for an enchantment, and when it enters the battlefield, you can choose Khans or Dragons. At the beginning, if you choose Khans, it has this ability for until it gets you get rid of it, or you can flicker it. Khans says, at the beginning of your main phases, add green to your mana pool. So in a full turn, that's 4 green mana total.
Right.
Which is excellent ramp.
First main, 1 in the second.
Mm-hmm. And then dragons, whenever a creature with flying enters the battlefield under your control, you may have it fight target creature you don't control. Turns every one of your creatures into a 1/8/7.
Yep. Everything's a Flame Tongue Kavu or something.
Yeah.
It is very powerful. And either mode is good. If you're early in the game and you want mana, you get the mana side. If you're mm-hmm. a little bit later, and now every single one of your creatures comes in and kills something.
Yeah.
Super powerful.
Not to mention, if you play this on your first main phase, it pays for itself, essentially. It'll essentially only cost 2 mana, considering you have something else to do with that mana to cast.
Yeah, it's a very good card.
Yeah. Definitely much better for EDH than it is for Constructed, like Limited or Standard and all that.
And then the last one we're going to have in this section that we're going to talk about is Xenagos, God of Revels. Very strong. We did a whole episode about Xenagos' deck. I'm just going to read them really quick. It's a god, 3, a red, and a green for a legendary creature, enchantment creature, sorry. God, 6/5, has indestructible. As long as your devotion to red and green is less than 7, Xenagos isn't a creature. But this is the real big part.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning of combat on your turn, another target creature you control gains haste and +X/+X until end of turn, where X is that creature's power.
I can just think of a Tarka here, just double striking for 24.
You're just dead.
Yeah.
And you can tutor, you can get a Tarka anytime you want, because you can turn Scion of the Ur-Dragon into a Tarka anytime mm-hmm. you want. So once you have Xenagos out, you can literally, anybody that can't block you, they're just dead.
Yeah, I like that because Xenagos really fuels the engine here, and he does it for free. That's why these God cards are so good, is because it's an effect that happens that you don't have to pay anything for it.
Yeah, it's just free. He just does it. And he's giving everything haste from the rest of the game. It's very strong. So we're not going to go through everything with this deck. We're not going to go through the normal things we would go through, like how to fight the deck and how to fight what they're using to fight you. And that's simply because it's a version one. And a version one, I'm not worried about that stuff yet. I'm going to tune the deck to that. What I'm worried about is, does the central conceit of the deck function?
Right.
So the central conceit of the deck is, I get Sign of the Ur-Dragon out, I put a bunch of dragons in my graveyard, and then I all of a sudden use a Living End or Living Death type effect to bring all of them back in one turn and just destroy everybody. So is that idea going to work? You know, and then my second sort of B storyline for the deck is, it also has a toolbox aspect to it. So does that work? And what other tools do I wish I had? So I got to play it a few times to figure that out.
And
just
see if the tools are also adequate or if you have too many. Because that is a fine balance.
A lot of times you go, oh, I don't need this many tools that do damage. I only need two things. And I wish I had one more thing that protected it. Or I wish I had one more thing that you know, gave me mana. You know, my big thing about this list is I probably don't have enough ramp and I probably don't have enough card draw.
It's true. It's interesting, though, because since you have Scion out there, he is becoming any dragon you want. You don't have to cast it, but you will have dragons sitting in your hand, so a Gilded Lotus or some kind of ramp is always, I guess, nice. You do have the Lotus in there, but I'm thinking actually maybe you would want like the Signets and stuff, so you can get Scion out a little earlier.
Yeah, it's really going to take the tuning of like exactly how many dragons do I need, do I want, which of these other creatures do I need. I might not need Caridor and Kalia and Mimeoplasm and Cedrus. That might be overkill. I might lose two of those, put in some two mana ramp cards there. You know, that's kind of how you continue to tune the deck, is like, because it might just be overkill. Like, I don't need 16 things that bring stuff out of my graveyard.
Right.
I just need, you know, I just need to get one.
Yeah, and you have to realize, like, they're awesome cards to have, and it fits within what you're trying to do, but if you draw that, like, turn one, what are you going to do with it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be sitting in your hand for a while.
And it's a six drop, so...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I really like the living death route, where you just get to kill everyone, because this is also anti-board wipe. Someone wipes the board, you're like, fine.
Living death, now what?
Living death, let's get ready to rumble. Here come the dragons.
Here come the dragons!
Not to mention that Wizards has printed at Uncommon one of the best tutors ever for dragons.
Yep.
It's Sarkhan's Triumph, two in a red for an instant. You get to search your library for a dragon creature card, reveal it, put it into your hand, and shuffle your library.
Pretty good.
It's another red tutor, and it's, I mean, it's really good for three mana if you have a dragon to search out for it. And I think this is definitely like, this is a love letter to EDH players right here, more so than the Elder Dragons themselves.
Yeah,
is
way more so.
Is the Draconic Tutor.
Yeah, Draconic Tutor. I like it.
Yeah, that's
There's one other card from Dragons I'd like to call out. It's Dragon Tempest.
Yep, this is in my deck too. It's so good.
It's one in red for an enchantment. It says, whenever a creature with flying enters the battlefield under your control, it gains haste until end of turn. So it gives all your dragons haste. Sorry, anything with flying haste.
Yeah.
And then when a dragon enters the battlefield under your control, it deals X damage to target creature or player, where X is the number of dragons you control.
Jeez.
So you can just start mowing stuff down depending on how many dragons you're able to stick at once.
And potentially just mowing down the player as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So very cool card. A lot of the new cards fit into decks like this. I think a lot of people are going to be trying to build dragon decks. I'm excited to build this one.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it too, especially when you get cards like Debtor's Knell out there, which is four and a white, black, so seven
or
total.
Three hybrid Orzhov.
Three hybrid Orzhov, yeah. In the beginning of your upkeep, put target creature card in a graveyard into play under control, under your control.
So it just freely takes something from your graveyard and
or
puts it in
anyone's
play.
Graveyard, yeah. That for that matter.
Oh, yeah, you're right. And it's, you don't have to pay mana cost. It's just you pick one and it comes out under your side. And it doesn't die at end of turn or anything. That's yours.
Not to mention, if you have this out before you're about to cast Living Death, you can get rid of the most problematic things from other people's graveyards
and
for that one turn and just get them. Yeah. Jeez. Well, this deck is a beating. It looks like a beating, and it looks like you could also have a lot of faces turned towards you and trying to eliminate you quickly.
I think that's probably true.
I think the one thing that we may see true for all of our dragon decks is the political aspect is very much, hey, guys, don't worry about me. I'm just hitting you for 20. It's not a big deal.
Thing is, there's a good toolbox aspect to the deck, so you may be able to handle some hate coming at you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It surprised people, you know, by like, oh, I turn my Scion into this, and all of a sudden it's like not what they expected, and you might be able to survive.
Not to mention that to really beat this deck, they're going to have to run Graveyard Hate. But on top of that, Scion always doesn't really matter because he can still fetch it from your library.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it doesn't matter if it's in the graveyard yet. Scion's going to go find it. So it's hard to combat specifically.
I mean, Anafenza would make it pretty Oh, well, no, that's only right. From, is it from players or from anywhere?
From anywhere.
Yeah, so yeah. Anafenza sort of screws it up,
mm-hmm.
but just don't play against Anafenza.
Don't, yeah, don't.
That's the strategy there.
Yeah, but even then, like, I think Sign still triggers, right, even if it doesn't go into the graveyard? No, if you do, yeah. So that does, Anafenza does actually actively stop Sign from going off.
If you have Anafenza in your playgroup, you're just going to have to run other specific answers for it.
Yeah. So this deck is fantastic. Again, one of the hardest things about doing five color decks is the land base. But
and I did lay out a full land base just because I knew mm-hmm. that was going to be a thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of great cheap lands here that are the three color lands, like Crumbling Necropolis. And
I
stuff.
Purposely didn't put a single dual land in there because that's not realistic for most people.
Yeah,
yeah.
And thanks to Khans of Tarkir, there are lots of lands for you to use in these decks. Now you have at minimum five that you're going to be able to get just from that set alone.
Yeah, you have the five tri-lands, mm-hmm. and then you get the five tri-lands from Shards of Alara that are not very expensive,
yep.
and then you get the five refuge lands if you want from Khans. That's already 15 of your lands, so you can actually build a five-color mana base for relatively inexpensive. Now, it's not going to be, you know, optimized, but you don't need optimized, trust me. I play a lot of decks that don't have an optimal mana base. They have a lot of lands that come into play tapped, and they still play just fine.
Yeah, they do great, actually. Every time you play a five-color deck, I'm always amazed. I'm like, how is every single time Josh by like turn five he has all five colors and it just means having a bunch of these tri-lands in there. Those are really the big ones,
because
having three out of the five colors in a single thing is super important.
It's worth a ton, and people shy away from it because it comes into play tapped, but it just doesn't matter that
much. It doesn't matter. I mean, if it's just a guild gate, then it's not that great, but if it can tap for three different colors of mana, it's definitely worth it.
Heck, I'll play a guild gate. I'm not above it.
Yeah, me neither. Okay, well, let's move on to the end step. So we're just going to do one end step per person for these next two episodes, because we can't think of that many cool things every week, I guess.
Yeah, we're going to have one each per week.
Yeah.
You want to go or you want me to go?
You go for this one, because it's your deck.
Okay, this is going to be a callback to an old end step and a new one. So there's a show on HBO called The Jinx. A lot of people are watching it.
Oh, my gosh, yeah, it's good.
It's so good. If you can and you haven't watched The Jinx, you need to watch it.
Yeah.
It's about, just quickly, it's about sort of a billionaire family member guy who's implicated in like three murders across the U.S. It's very, very interesting. He was actually caught and then escaped conviction. Not escaped, but he got off one of them multiple times.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's he's been in the news a lot. So if you've watched that show and you like it, there is a podcast I talked about on our very first End Step called Serial Podcast.
Serial, yeah.
And if you like The Jinx, you'll love Serial Podcast. And if you listen to the Serial Podcast, you'll love The Jinx. So I just want to make sure that, you know, any of the people on the planet that like one but haven't watched the other, go watch it. Those things line up very good. Very good
call. Yeah. And it's not just us hyping it up. Don't be like, oh, it was too hyped up. As I found with documentaries, when they're good, they're good.
That show is unbelievable. The last episode, you're like, your hair's on fire.
Yeah, you're screaming at the TV.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I've heard some amazing things of how people watched it and just their reactions in general. And the news that is happening literally right now, it's so relevant. So if you have a chance to watch it sooner rather than later, I would recommend doing it now.
And there's only six episodes, so it doesn't take a long time. We watched it all, my girlfriend and I, over the course of two nights.
Yeah,
so.
And they're very well produced. And I love good documentaries, so that's a great end step. Very nice. All right.
So just a quick reminder, you know, we're on this big push to get the show out there. So please tell your friends about the show if you're enjoying the show. You know, that helps us grow.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget to tune into the second episode of Dragon Week,
Roar!
Which is going to be this Thursday. It's going to be another deck tech. My deck tech. Spoiler, it's a dragon. And it's a fun. I was gonna
say, is it Trogdor?
It is Trogdor, and we're burninating across the land.
Trogdor was a man. Actually, he was a dragon.
There will be a lot of burninating with my deck, that's for sure. And also, let us know what you guys think about the new shorter episode format. If you guys like it or not, we're just sort of testing it out for this Dragon Week in particular. But if you guys like it, we may continue the trend down the line. So post in the comments, send a tweet at us, and of course, follow us on Twitter at Josh Lee Kwai and at JF Wong. We do lots of giveaways. We also retweet all of them so everyone can see the awesome polls that everyone's been getting.
And follow the show at CommandCast.
Yes, sir. All right, everybody. We will see you next Thursday for the second installment of Dragon Week.
Thanks for listening.
Peace.
See ya.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.